Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy New Year to you guys as well. And thanks. Before we even talk football, I mean, we have some great news heading into the new year. Ryan Wood is an engaged man.
Yes, I am.
Congratulations.
You were the accomplice on that. Thank you for being there, Dominique, who recorded my proposal, my new fiance, two nights ago. Yeah. So, absolutely remarkable, special, wonderful week for us. I appreciate you mentioning that, and I appreciate you being a big part of it.
Absolutely. Had a lot of fun. It was great to be there and witness it, and I guess my years of shooting videos and photos, you know,
crushed it. You absolutely crushed it. Me and my fiance were looking at the video over and over again later that night when we got home, and we're like, "My goodness, you got every angle! Like this man is a talented man."
A second,
yes,
I know.
Some weddings.
I did it for free too, though. So that's why you know we're friends, right? I didn't charge,
and it was not free work. It was exceptional work. So yeah. We appreciated it.
No, very excited. Yeah, obviously,
thank you very much.
It's appreciate great news. Story. So. What a great moment. So now, firing Matt LaFleur. No, I'm just kidding.
How are we going to get to this game now? Can you guys carry a tune? Because the Green Bay Packers are. Yeah, he saw right when I... Yeah, that's a dad joke for you right there. What the Green Bay Packers are doing.
Look at that. New year, bringing in some jokes, coming in hot this year. I love it. So
it's January 1st, baby.
Yeah, but it is interesting, like, this podcast. I feel like we're, like, doing a preseason pod.
Yeah, it's pretty close to that.
Yeah.
It really is. The game is a preseason game.
It is.
Cross your fingers that nobody gets hurt as far as Matt LaFleur is concerned.
Yes. So, honestly, I want to spend this podcast just talking about who should rest, at least who we feel should rest, and who should play. And before we kind of dive into that, it really does start with Jordan Love, because Matt LaFleur confirmed that Clayton Tune will be the starter. And even right now, he's still trying to figure out the backup situation because of Malik Willis. He said, because at first it was the shoulder, he's talking about dealing with a hamstring right now. So, you know, you might see Clayton Tune and Desmond Ridder as, you could say, the two quarterbacks in this game.
But fun.
Yeah, get excited. We should be resting, like, we're starters. We should be resting this game.
How about him coming, you know, having to face Brian Flores in his first start?
Oh, my goodness.
Not fun.
Oh, my God, that's going to be fun. Just a disaster.
Yeah, I don't even know, like, what's worse than being thrown in a fire? Like, a forest fire, a furnace? What is? I don't even know how you can explain that.
Maybe LaFleur can figure out some way to make a deal with Flores, you know, and... You know, pump him up for a head job somewhere and in exchange for not blitzing.
You know, the thing is, I'm curious what you guys think about this, because all week I've been wondering, like, this is the ultimate, like, what are they playing for game, right, on both sides? Because it's a meaningless game. Packers are 7th seed regardless of winning or losing. The Packers are playing for staying healthy. That's what they're playing for. The Vikings are playing for a winning record. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's... It's kind of shocking with where they were 6 weeks ago that that's even on the table, but it is. They win this game, they're 9-8. Yeah. So I don't think that Brian Flores is going to take it too easy, because, I mean, that first year J.J. McCarthy, that helps. It's been a tumultuous year in Minnesota. To say you got out of it with a winning record, you're Kevin O'Connell, I mean, that's nice.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that I do think about when I watch this Vikings team, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, like, what do you want to see? Or what are you interested in with this Packers group without Parsons, without all the injuries going through this stretch? And I was wondering, like, will they still play hard? You know, does Matt LaFleur still have the locker room? And at least on the Viking side, Kevin O'Connell definitely still has that locker room because they played hard. They're on, a four-game winning streak. They've been eliminated from the playoffs like 3 weeks now. And they still, you know, played and competed. And, I mean, the Detroit Lions game on Christmas was obviously incredibly impressive. At least from, you know, a defensive standpoint, they still have to figure out the quarterback situation and offensively. But at least that's something that stood out to me with that Vikings team. And so, you know, I don't know. They talk about, can you match that energy? Will you use this as some momentum going into this? But I don't even know if that really does matter in terms of momentum now with the playoffs looming. And I think they're kind of going on the side of caution and saying, who cares, win or lose, let's just make sure we get to maybe Chicago if that's that playoff game healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I would treat it like a preseason game. Yeah. I don't injury is the most important thing. And, you know, Chicago is playing to win against Detroit, and maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe that's going to help their momentum going into the playoffs, but it's a risk. Yeah. And I think rest is better than playing a meaningless game, especially up on that field where they've lost a lot of guys to significant injuries. And so I don't think it's a problem holding them out. You know, they need to get the taste out of their mouth from the Baltimore game, but I think the only way they do that is by beating Chicago in the first round of the playoffs. And so I would allow some guys, some young guys, to play, and I would press upon them how important it is to set a standard or to show everybody that they're not just throwing them out there for no reason at all.
Yeah. Also, I guess you could throw in Trevon Diggs into that group of just, like, what does he look like? If he is able to play, how can he kind of run with this defense? And obviously you're not going to see everything you need to see from this one game, but I would be interested in just seeing if he is able to go, what he would do, if he would be able to be a fit in this defense. And I think more than anything, as far as with Diggs, it's like it's a low-risk move. I think that's the biggest thing, I think. You know, what do you kind of even make from just Diggs out there?
It's a week 18 audition. They're going to throw him out there, see what they have in him. And, you know, the reason this is low risk is there's no guaranteed money after 2025 on his contract. They can release him after the year and be off the hook completely. So why would you not do that? I mean, it's an obvious decision. Not saying that Trevon Diggs is going to come and save the secondary here, but if he's an upgrade over Carrington Valentine going into the postseason, there's no repercussions on the back end of this. Why not? It's an audition in Minnesota to see what he has right now. So him playing is obvious. I'm on the record, and Spoon, I think we disagree here, but I don't think they're beating Chicago or less likely matchup Philly with Jordan Love not playing the final 2.5 games of the regular season. I thought their best chance at this point with the construct of this roster, the injury situation, was to have a red-hot Jordan Love going into the postseason. And it's going to be the opposite of that. There will be rust. Now, how much rust, we don't know. But there's going to be at least some rust, having not played for the better part of 3 games. And then you're going to throw him out there in a playoff game. And we'll see if he can shake it off by the first, second quarter and get hot in the process of doing so. But I thought this was a ramp to doing that. And you don't have to play him the whole game, but to shut him down completely, I don't see them winning the playoffs when he did not play 2.5 games going into the playoffs.
I really went back and forth on that, but Spoon, I'd like to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I just, with a guy that's coming off a concussion, I'm not taking that risk. You know, all it takes is one hit. He hits his head, and then he's out. There's no way they bring him back for the first round of the playoffs. I'm in the same boat with Malik Willis. I would want both of them to be healthy going into the Chicago game. Like, Malik Willis should absolutely not play. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And when they come back, they should both play. I mean, I'm not saying Malik Willis is the starter. I'm saying there has to be a package for him at some point. You know, and bring them back both healthy. I think Jordan Love, he's been practicing for the last 2 weeks. If he weren't practicing and had a physical injury, then I might think about it. But I don't think a rest is going to hurt him. I really don't. I think he's played enough games that it's not like he's coming back without anything. So I'd be more worried about him getting hurt.
Yeah, I'll be very interested to see if it does or not. I think it will, but I could be wrong. Maybe he comes out in Chicago and he just throws up 3-4 touchdowns, no picks, and looks like Jordan Love. I'll be very fascinated to see that. I agree with you on Malik Willis. The difference with Malik Willis and Jordan Love, he has been playing, right? Like he is red hot right now. So shutting him down one game, that's a no-brainer. You don't need to see anything more from Malik Willis than what he showed you the last game and a half. Like, you can go and beat a defense with him at quarterback right now. It's an incredible situation that they have. Most of the league is trying to find a good quarterback. They have two. I completely agree that he also needs to be on the field. There needs to be a red zone package from Malik Willis in the playoffs. Like, it's all hands on deck at that point. He is one of your best 11. He is playing at a very high level. He needs to be a part of this thing, so long as you have him, which is not going to be much longer. But I do think that 2.5 games is a substantial amount of time to miss, and I think that there's going to be some repercussions there.
I do wonder about the rust, but one thing I even thought about, because I went back and forth on this too, like, should he get like a half, like, should you treat it like preseason, maybe get him a series or get him a half, but the one thing I also thought about, I don't know if this is a defense that you can just play with, especially if you don't have, like, Zach Tom at right tackle.
Right.
Like, especially the
man you plan on resting anybody else.
Yes, yeah. Right. And so it's like the more and more I go back and think about that Christmas Day game and how they just destroyed Jared Goff. All the hits he took, all of the pressure that was there. So, again, that risk of injury, I don't know if the Vikings, this defense is one of those with that pass rush that you would even want to try to play around with that and see what happens. I think that was one of the things that I finally came down to. I'm like, okay, just wait and see what happens in Chicago. Because, yeah, Chicago, they have the takeaways, but that pass rush isn't as daunting as the Vikings.
Yeah, and he played against Chicago. So he played almost a half against Chicago and looked pretty good. So, I mean, it's not like he hasn't seen them and it'll be a big foreign thing for him when he plays. But I agree with you. The injury thing would just scare the crap out of me if I'm LaFleur. And I would want to – we'll talk about who we're going to rest, but there's a couple offensive linemen I would want to rest. Yeah. And that – if I'm taking out any offensive lineman, then Jordan Love can't play. Yes. Not against that defense.
I hear that. Yeah, I mean, there's if he were to play this week, there's a very clear risk of injury. And I'm not blind to that. There's also obviously a chance that he gets through clean. You know, one of the things that Jordan Love does very well is mitigate the pass rush. He can re-diagnose and get rid of the ball very, very quick. He's always been good at that. The risk of him not playing is 2.5 games, and then you're putting him out on the field for the playoffs.
No doubt.
The risk is not having Jordan Love at the top of his game, which I think is a very real risk when you shut down that early. And so that is something that's the path they're going to go. He will be fresh physically for the postseason. That's the reward. How does he navigate the rust, which I think is going to be something to navigate that. We'll see.
I don't think he's going to be that rusty. I don't really think 2.5 games is that much. I mean, guys, it happens. I mean, maybe he's overly excited and he throws some balls out into the stands in the first series or something like that, but I think there's ways to also get him back, you know, hit some short passes, just get him in a little bit of a rhythm to start, get Josh Jacobs going. Yeah. You're not facing the greatest defense on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
So if I were getting ready to face the Vikings in the first round, then I might want him to play, or the Eagles, I might want him to play.
Yes.
Just to get a feel for that. But I think he'll be all right against the Bears. So we'll find out in 2 weeks.
I think he'll score. The thing is, the Bears' defense is bad. It's why I don't see the Bears as a serious contender to make a deep playoff run with that defense. I mean, if Caleb Williams has the ball last in any game, they've got a shot. But if he doesn't, that Bears' defense can lose to anybody. What you're looking at is probably a shootout type game. I thought it was an anomaly when they went to Chicago. That's not the type of game I'm expecting in the postseason. You're going to need a quarterback that can make every play. You got to have a quarterback that can keep up with Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson. It doesn't take much. I think that he'll play okay against the Bears, but is it well enough to outscore that offense in Chicago is the question for me.
Yeah, no question about that. So let's kind of jump into some of the starters that you guys think should rest or should play and et cetera. And I guess we can take it from offensive line because you mentioned that. And I want to hear the O-line guys you're thinking of, and then I'd like to hear any guys from you as well. Because the number one for me was Zach Tom.
Yeah.
Who else were you having in mind?
He should play, of course. Did he practice today?
He did.
He did? Yeah, I wouldn't play him. I let him get sharp in practice, but give him one more week to get over that back thing. I think I would think about sitting Sean Ryan, and I would play like Jacob Monk, because they have not had a backup center play. You know, they don't have a real backup center. So I would start Jacob Monk. And Ryan he's had a heck of a year. He's, I mean, you know, from switching positions, he's been banged up, he's been sick. Just to let him have a week off. I would potentially think about playing Jordan Morgan at left tackle.
That's when I asked that.
You know, and then maybe let, you know, I'm not sure who you would put in at right tackle. You could possibly bump Belton out there and put Donovan Jennings at guard.
Or Kennard.
Yeah, you could put Kennard at right tackle. I would think about that.
Yeah.
Just and see how Jordan Morgan plays. And then who knows? You know, if he, like, dominates, then maybe you think about starting him in the final. True. But
I'll do you one better. I'd do it.
Yeah.
What's the reason not to?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you put Jordan Morgan at left tackle?
Only if you're worried about Rashid Walker going in the tank. You know, like, he's one game away from free agency, and he's ticked off that they even thought about it. But if I'm him, I'd be like, thanks. You know, I don't want to get hurt in my free agency year. Go ahead, play the guy, because I'm going somewhere else.
And you probably expect to be back at left tackle for the playoff game, which is one heck of a carrot going into your free agency year. Right. So I don't think he would go in the tank. I get your point.
Yeah.
That's, boy, the friction there has to be fairly substantial. I mean, you've got the young first-round pick that's making it very clear, rightly so, that he's a left tackle.
Yeah.
And you've got the veteran going in his free agent years holding on to left tackle. I mean, it's not a comfortable situation, but Rashid Walker has plenty of reasons not to go in the tank. I wouldn't expect that.
Yeah, that would be a bad look for him going into free agency.
So I absolutely put Jordan Morgan.
But so that. Would... them replacing him with Jordan Morgan in the playoff game would be a really bad look for him. So, I don't know. I would do it. I would start Jordan Morgan at left tackle. And like you said, Kennard, that's probably the best bet at right tackle.
Or, you know, Kennard, or I don't mind the idea of kicking out Anthony Belton either. This game is an opportunity to see guys do what you've wondered if they could do or not. And now you have a chance to actually see it. Like, can Anthony Belton play a pretty good right tackle? If you don't know, why not put him out there? Matthew Golden, if he doesn't get double-digit targets this week, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to play Christian Watson.
Correct.
There's no reason to play Jaden Reed.
Correct.
There's no reason really to play or even Romeo Dobbs.
I don't think I would play Dobbs.
No. You know? So put Matthew Golden out there, give him 12 to 15 targets, and just see what you got.
Yeah.
Because you haven't seen it all year. Yeah. And some of that's injury. Some of that is... poor development, frankly, not prioritizing it. But this is like, this game is screaming Matthew Golden double-digit targets.
Yeah. I think as far as targets in this game, Golden should be one. Musgrave should probably be two.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, you know, Wicks hasn't practiced this week. He, like, because he was evaluated for a concussion.
Don't put him out there.
Yeah, so don't put him out there either.
He may not be able
to. Yeah, right.
Exactly, so.
Well, you're running out of receivers then. Then
Bo Melton.
Then you got to play. Well, I mean, you can't play two receivers the whole game unless you're going to play three tight ends throughout the game. So I guess, you know, you'd have to pick somebody who's going to play. I mean, Dobbs and Reed are probably going to have to play some.
So.
But I wouldn't play Watson. Absolutely would not play Watson.
No, zero. I wouldn't be against seeing a little bit from Reed just because they've still been ramping him up, you know, coming off that injury.
I'd play Dobbs before I would play Reed.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that.
If that's good enough to get you by on numbers, I would not play Reed. If you need him for numbers, it could be like the Josh Jacobs Baltimore treatment where he had like four carries.
You know,
just very, very small sample size, maybe, if you need him for the numbers. Because Matt LaFleur's made that point, which is, look, guys, we only have 53 spots, and you have less than that on game day. Like, some of these guys are going to have to play with our injury situation. I understand that, but it doesn't mean you have to play them a lot.
Yeah. You mentioned Josh Jacobs. That's the easiest note.
Yeah, it is.
That was the easiest one. Like, I didn't even have to debate that one.
No.
So.
With or without Jordan Love. Even if they had Jordan Love, that was the guy that, like, don't play him. Either way.
The number one no question about that.
Was he practicing today?
He was. Yeah, he's practiced.
I'm surprised even at that. Well, maybe they're not doing a lot with him, but, you know, he just needs rest. Mm-hmm. He needs to rest that knee.
Yeah. So, and I think what LaFleur did mention that, you know, they obviously tweaked practice a little bit heavier on the walkthrough mm-hmm. instead of live reps. So, yeah, maybe it's like he goes through some stretching and drills, and then Emmanuel Wilson is, like, with the first team or something. Obviously, we don't get to see practice. So, but, yeah, I think the rest for Jacobs is crucial.
Yeah, and maybe some of that is part of the rehab is actually moving around yep. and, you know, taking some snaps. So they just can't have him banging knees with somebody, you know.
Absolutely not. So, yeah, it's interesting. So, like, who else are you guys thinking of? Because, I mean, I wrote down a bunch of different names, and I can just read them out.
Well, that's it on offense.
Offense, yeah. Yes.
If I was going on defense, I'd probably sit Keyshawn Nixon. I'd think about sitting Lucas Van Ness, even though he's coming off probably his best game.
Yeah.
But, you know, that foot would worry me on turf. Mm-hmm. You know, you really need him healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Gary could play the whole game, you know. Yep. And no reason to take him out.
Maybe find something in those four quarters.
I would not play Quay Walker and Edrian Cooper.
No.
I'd take both of them out.
Correct.
I'd play Hopper and McKenzie.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't play Evan Williams.
No, I wouldn't play Aaron McKinney.
Or McKinney.
Go ahead and play Oladapo and, well, you don't have Zane Anderson. Who else?
Jalen Simpson, is he? He's not a safety,
he's
is
a
he?
Corner.
I guess maybe Tyron Herring,
yeah.
The practice squad guy, maybe they can.
They list him as a corner, but he was a safety.
During preseason, yeah.
I believe that he's capable of playing.
Oh, Bullard can play.
True.
I don't want to lose him, but it's more, that's
know.
A tough one.
I'd only play him on numbers if I had to have the numbers, if I didn't have to have the numbers, especially with his play style. You know, you're one snap away from him going in full speed and something happening. I wouldn't risk that.
Because he's dealt with his share of injuries even this season. What was the Cleveland game? He dealt with a concussion or he was evaluated for one. So just taking physical hits.
Yeah, he's had some other stuff. He had an ankle too, I think.
He did, yeah.
That's one of those situations you can't rest everybody. So. Right. Pick who you think you need to rest the most, and Evan Williams needs to sit.
Yeah.
I mean, McKinney could play. He's played every snap this year.
Yeah.
You could play him. It's just, if he gets hurt.
No reason to.
No.
There's just no reason to.
I don't know how they'll do it. Yeah, maybe with the guys like the McKinneys of the world or Edrian Cooper, maybe they play him a half, and if the game is already kind of out of hand, maybe it's like, okay, like we're done with this. I don't know. It'll be a really interesting hell. They manage a lot of these guys in some of those snaps.
Yeah, they can't have a Baltimore game where they play 77 snaps or whatever it was, you know, 53 rushes, and they're just, you know, because some of those guys are going to have to do double duty on special teams, too.
Yeah.
You know, starters are going to have to play special teams because if they want to rest guys, you got to have guys doing both.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Hoppers and Oladapos, and they're going to have to still play all their special teams, I think.
Yeah, it is kind of unique. We talk about just all of the injuries, and it is pretty fascinating, if you will. I don't know if fascinating is the right word to see how they've lost not only starters but depth pieces.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty crazy that can happen, even, you know, from the Zane Andersons of the world and ankle injury. I already went blank on his name. Kamal Haddon went down with his injury on injury reserve, and then obviously Nate Hobbs is on IR as well. So,
and even things like, you know, Marshawn Lloyd's never been able to make it back,
right.
Like, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
It's interesting. So Sports Info Solutions did an injury comparison around the league, and they gave it weighted points for guys who missed, how important your guy was, and how many numbers of guys you got. And the Packers injury situation was below middle of the pack. So they were probably like 20 or something like that. Like, the Bears were weighted higher, just slightly, as far as injuries. I think the Lions were higher. And I don't know, like, Arizona was number one. So, you know, it's not an exact science because the Packers lost some really key players.
Yeah.
But it does put into perspective a little bit that it's not the worst injury situation in the league. Teams can overcome injury situations. And the Packers, you know, they have every chance to win their first game. Injuries are not. Micah Parsons are not. But they need some of their other guys who aren't playing that well to play better.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the key. I want to look that up. I want you to show me that after this pod. I think that's very
My question unique. With that is just how can you possibly accurately weigh a Micah Parsons? Like, he just...
I guess that's so what I was... Integral.
Well, they
I guess
weighed that's what I was his curious. Stat. They weighed their stats. Okay. So, you know, this is now you're taking away this amount of stats per game. You know, Tucker Kraft, what his per game was, and they weighted it that way. So, I like I said, it's just one person, it's one organization's stat goose guys doing it. But, it didn't put them even in the top 10. So, they should be doing better. Rashawn Gary should be playing better. Keyshawn Nixon should be playing. Karen King Valentine should be playing better. McKinney should be playing better. Yeah. There's a lot of guys that
Andrew Cooper.
Yeah, that aren't reaching their potential, and that's kind of held this team down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really what it boils down to. Before we, continue with this, Ryan already asked him about Diggs being in the mix. Spoon, just what were your initial thoughts on just the Packers making this move?
Why not? You know, why not? You know, from the long-term standpoint, you know, I mean, he had some issues with the Cowboys where he, you know, blatantly, you know, stayed home when they were supposed to get on the plane. And but, you know, Micah Parsons, I think, is really close with him. McKinney played with him for several years. Jacobs, I think, might have been with him for a couple of years. They may have the... you know, environment for him to succeed. Now, I don't know. Injuries have affected him. I think you take a look, and I think you can bring him back in the off season, even though his cap number's kind of high. If you have the cap space, bring him back in the off season, see how it goes.
I think if I had to guess, they release him after the season, and then there's not a team in the league right now that's going to give him a similar contract that he has. His value is nowhere near
what,
because this was an extension that was signed before, 2-3 months before he tore his ACL in September 2023, and he hasn't been the same guy. Yeah. So release him, because you're not going to pay him those salary figures. You don't owe him guaranteed money. And I think there's a very real chance with Micah Parsons here, if you want him back, with Xavier McKinney, and he played with Josh Jacobs, he has a lot of familiarity, but especially Micah Parsons, if you want to... if you want a significant pay cut, which is what the league is going to
do, you
can get him back on that.
Yep, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, so
that'd be my guess on how, if they want him, that's how it unfolds.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that's where I'm just interested to see what he looks like at all in this system. Obviously, we haven't seen the same guy since 2021 when he led the league in interceptions. He was a first team All Pro player. You haven't seen that from Diggs over the past couple of years. You know, you kind of mentioned injuries, and it is fascinating to see Parsons on Twitter or X talk about this guy, because even someone with the Cowboys, I don't know if it was a fan or former writer who looked at all the numbers of Diggs and how he struggled like this year and how he wasn't good, and Parsons jumped on it immediately, like, oh, he's going to do great in this system, he's going to be fine, and trust me,
Michael Parsons he's going to run back for 2026. Now, that doesn't mean that he'll be back, but there's going to be strong support there.
Yeah.
But who knows?
You know, Spoon made an interesting point. The guys that you listed who need to be playing better, that are not playing their best, playing at the top of their game, those guys are on defense. How do you think that the rest of the league might evaluate that when it comes to Jeff Hafley right now?
Wow.
A lot of guys that on that defense not playing at the top of their game.
Well, I am not. I have not been one of the people who was certain he's going to get a head coaching job. I think he's going to get interviews, but I think when push comes to shove, they'll look at his Boston College record. They'll look at his years in the league. It hasn't been a ton. I think people are going to want more. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to see more from his resume before they hire him as a head coach. And the other thing is, there's way better guys with better track records, defensive assistants, who I think have better track records that are going to get jobs ahead of him.
Right.
So, yeah, he needs to have, like, a really killer year to draw it. So I don't think they're going to lose him. I've kind of felt that all year. But anything can happen. All he's got to do is impress one owner. You know,
I've kind of felt that maybe over the last month. I wouldn't say all year. You were ahead of the game on this. When the defense was balling out, Micah Parsons doing what he was doing, and it looked like they might have a top five defense in the league, I'm thinking there's a real chance that they could lose Jeff Hafley next year. I'm not there right now. And if you're Jeff Hafley, not the worst thing in the world either, because you just come right back year three of your system. You have a healthy Micah Parsons. Yeah. You're going to be a top Super Bowl contending team in no small part because of your defense next year. And if 2026 goes the way that it really could go on paper, go to a Super Bowl, maybe win a Super Bowl, you're going to be right back, you know, as a top candidate for a head coaching job in a year.
Yeah, Ryan, you just made this the perfect segue, because how about we start at the top with Matt LaFleur himself in this situation. Spoon, you know, we both talked about the column that you put together, very, very well put together, very thorough, a lot of insights. And I even joked with Spoon when I was reading it. I started with, okay, maybe they should run it back with LaFleur. Read a little bit more. Okay, maybe they should see what else is out there.
Well, that's what was so good about the column is it, and I'm going to gloat on you a little bit, Spoon, so just, I know this makes you uncomfortable.
La, 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 la.
Right. But it, reading it all, it is that complex of a situation.
Absolutely.
It is that complex. And I thought the column expertly laid out all the complexities, all the things that need to be considered by Ed Policy, why this is... Truly, I've had people ask me, what's going to happen? And I don't know. It's a really tough call. And the column has all of that in there, very easily digested.
Yeah, even your parents asked us about it when we were playing games on New Year's Eve.
But I don't know. Like, I could make an argument, a strong argument, I feel, for and against.
Yeah.
So and it's all in there, the complexities of this thing.
Yeah. And there's various options. So, you know, Policy has said he doesn't want a lame duck coach,
right,
but he didn't say that he absolutely wouldn't. He said he'd prefer not to. If they try to extend LaFleur 1 year, 2 years, and he's like, no, I think I can do better on the open market, they could just do a 1 year run back, and, you know, if they win the Super Bowl, then he cashes in and he probably goes somewhere else. Or they have to offer him just a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, right now, you know, the top guys make between 15 and 20. We're talking Andy Reid makes $20 million. Mm-hmm. John Harbaugh makes $18 million. Sean Payton makes $19 million. The thing that really screwed everything up was Ben Johnson got $13 million right off the bat. And now that just raised the level for guys like LaFleur, who are like, under $10 million. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then Policy has these options. Okay, I could offer him a 3-year deal at $12 million, maybe $36 million we'd have to eat if we fire him. Or maybe I do a 2-year at $30 million. So he gets a higher, he's willing to take 2 years because he gets a higher salary. Mm-hmm. Or he just says, you know what? I'm not sold on you. You go out and negotiate a deal with anybody, and then we'll work out compensation with that team.
Yeah.
It's happened. It happened with Sean Payton.
Yeah.
You know, it happened with, actually with Bill Belichick. It happened with, Mike Holmgren in a way. They gave him permission, and then they got a second round pick back from the Seattle Seahawks. So it's not out of the question you could do that. I think LaFleur, if he's fired tomorrow, I think he has a job. With, like I said in the column, within a week.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I'm Arizona, I would hire him immediately to take over. Giants to take over Jackson Dart.
I would
hire him right away. Titans to do Cam Ward. Yeah, absolutely. So Policy has to take that into consideration. The one thing we don't know is how sold he is on LaFleur. And I, you know, if I'm policy, I would say, and if I was policy, I'd said this in the column too, I would make Gutekunst the all-powerful GM. I would take all that three-silo crap and just have a GM. But, okay, regardless of that, if I'm policy, I'd say, okay, three-year, but you got to get rid of Bisaccia. You have to improve your offensive line coaching and potentially, you know, bring in someone defensively who could take over if Halfley leaves, you know, like a real legit person, and make him make some of those moves because he's been really loyal to his guys. Yes. And I think he needs to make some changes.
Does the structure allow him to be that loyal, do you think? When he's completely in charge of the coaching staff.
Right.
And Ed Policy, or the president, Mark Murphy, for him, is not going to lean in
correct
to the football. There's no accountability there to right be overly loyal.
Gutekunst, the general manager, can't say, you got to get rid of this guy.
Right.
You know, we're not going to, you know, he could, the general manager could say, you may want him back, but we're not paying him $2 million to be our special teams coach.
Right.
Or something like that. You know, we're not going to extend him. Most of those guys work on two-year deals. So the thing they would say is, we're not going to extend you, and you can go and find a two-year deal somewhere else or play out your year. And I think that LaFleur, he has all the power with the staff right now, the way things are set up. So that would be the first thing to me to look for, is whether policy changes the structure.
So the complexities is because there are legitimately a lot of options for Ed Policy on the table here, and his job is going to be to pick the best option, and that's not easy because there's a lot of options.
No.
So let's do this exercise. Let's rank options from best to worst, because I'll start here. I think the worst option, I still go back to what Ed Policy does not want to do, which is a lame duck situation, because we're talking about this now.
Yeah.
He still has a year under contract next year. Can you imagine a year from now if he's a lame duck and they're in this situation? And make no mistake, 2020, you thought 2025 was Super Bowl or bust? My goodness, next year is literally as Super Bowl or bust as you could ever see for any team. That is all 2026 is. You really want that pressure cooker, that distraction hanging like a guillotine over the 2026 season? No, that's a non-starter to me. Right?
Every time they lose two in a row, you'd be like policy, you know, no, or floor, you know, you think you're not safe, you know, are you gone? Okay, he wins three in a row. Policy, are you going to extend him? Are you, should you extend him during the season? I mean, it just becomes a huge distraction.
And it's tricky, especially because if it goes the right way for LaFleur, he has more leverage.
Oh, absolutely.
He's asking, oh, no, you can't. I was like, I was going to agree to this figure, but no, that's up now.
Or I'm
going to
go Andy Reid money, you know, or something like that.
So that's the on the spectrum, that's like the last resort. I would not do that. Yeah. You know what I would like to do, and I think what's going to be fascinating about this, is I'm sure we'll all have different ideas here. What I would like to do, if I was a Packers, is a two-year extension on a high AAV. I would want to put him through year 10. You've got to have high AAV to make it attractive enough to Matt LaFleur, who knows his market's going to be robust elsewhere in the league, to stay. That, to me, is the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. 2 years, high AAV. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm not averse to that.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like, you know, the Packers, so the difference, so if you give him a three-year deal, you give him 12, you know, $36 million, you know, assuming he accepts that. It's better than $30 million, but he might be more willing to do 2 years. Now, maybe you don't offer him the 2 years. Maybe you just say it's 3 years, $12 million, $15 million if you win the Super Bowl or something like that, you know. I would not be afraid to give him 3 years, and the reason is that the Packers are made of money. I mean, $36 million is a lot of money, but it's not that much money to the Packers, who have oodles. And I mean, they make that in 1 year, Mm-hmm. Now, you do have to go and hire a new coach and a new staff, so it's a significant amount of money. But you figure you're going to get at least one more year out of them. I would consider the 3 year. I would do what you said. The 2 year would be my first offer.
Yeah.
And because of the point you just made, they are made of money. I wouldn't shy away from high AAV. They have the money to do that. I do think. I agree. I think he's a great quarterback developer. Great quarterback developers are the zenith of attractable head coaching candidates. Like, that's this league. He would get a job before leaving the parking lot if he wanted one, if you fired him. But I also see, okay, Super Bowl bust next year. Look at this season. There's some games they should have won that they didn't. You mm-hmm. can point yep. to coaching.
Absolutely.
And there's Matthew Golden. Where's his development been?
Absolutely.
Jordan Morgan last year. Where's his development been? Those are two first-round picks. There's enough warts here to also be concerned about committing long-term right now. And so that is why, for me, the sweet spot is shorter on term, higher on money, because you got it. Use it to your leverage and your advantage.
Yeah, and that's what's so unique. I think about just this conversation we're having right now. I can only imagine what it's like for Ed Policy, Russ Ball, like all of those guys in the room, because you know you have to run through these things, right? Because you look at the body of work. Yeah, it's like, do you want to mess up? Like, Jordan Love's going to go into year four as the starter. Like, do you want to try to keep the engine rolling? Like, Christian Watson is having a really good year. You should have Tucker Kraft healthy, Michael Parsons, all this group. It's like, do you want to bank on that continuity staying and they make a run at the Super Bowl? Or do they say, is he not the guy that can get them to the promised land?
Yeah, it's a gamble. Read into Malik Willis playing as well as he is that Love isn't a good fit for the offense.
Mm.
Maybe there's a better offense. But then you go to the other part of the story, which is who's going to be better? Who can you get right now that will be better?
Yeah.
You know, most of the guys who seem to be like they'll be available at coaches, and we don't even know if that'll happen, Tomlin and Harbaugh, those aren't offensive coaches.
Yeah, and you made a great point. In this cycle, there are no Liam Cohens. There are no Ben Johnsons.
There's no slam dunks.
There isn't.
You know, there just aren't.
Yeah. Which matters a lot. That point should not be glossed over.
Yeah.
Like, this is every year the head coaching cycle continues. The carousel is always the same, but the market's not always the same.
Yeah.
And the market really matters, because it's not enough just to fire somebody. You always, always, always need to have a next step. What is next? Who is the guy? What is the plan after that decision?
Yeah.
And if it's not a slam dunk, you got a guy who would be easily, in this cycle, the most attractive head coaching candidate on the market. That kind of tells you something.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he's won games. I think what is almost at 70% career, or I think it might actually
65,
be
65,
or 67 maybe. I'm sorry, I had to do it once. I'm sorry.
Donovan Jennings.
I do think it's actually 67, like 670% or something like that. But you
isn't know, everything in life?
It really is. But hey, he has accomplished a lot of things. But yeah, I do wonder if they say, okay, we're running this back, but you had to be proactive with your staff. Because one thing I even thought about looking at some of the other coaches in the league, like Sean McVay wasted no time to fire his special teams coach.
Yeah.
Dan Campbell wasted no time to demote his offensive coordinator, and he started calling plays.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if they're going to be like, all right, Matt, you got to do the same. Like,
you guys also have GMs.
True.
You know?
And you have to develop some coaches who, you know, really become rising stars. Who are your guys who've moved on to do anything special, you know? I think maybe the best recent hire he's had was maybe Sean Mannion, which seems like that's been a good fit. Halfley was a good hire.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Anthony Campanelli, that was a good hire, but you only had him for a year.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess you could say Ben Sermons. I mean, the running backs have been well. Even Emmanuel Wilson.
Ben Sermons was here.
Okay.
So, you know, who is your, like, up-and-comer? The guy who's really helping you take your offense to another level? A lot of the guys he's got helping him and it's not a knock against Luke Getsy or whatever, but our guys who've been here, is there an outside influence that you are willing to take a chance on? So I don't know. I just think I have been felt like their offensive line has not developed the way it should.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they blew it with Anthony Morgan. They waited too long on Belton. You know, they could have looked into Ryan as a center earlier. I don't know. I just think there should be better development there. I think they have good players there.
The decision making has been especially bad there. To have Jordan Morgan just whipped all over the place.
Yeah.
He's telling you with his play, he's not a Zach Tom. He's not an offensive lineman who can play all five. Right. Put him where he's best and let him develop. The delay in getting Anthony Belton at right guard, when it was pretty clear you don't have a right guard right now. He's 336 pounds. He's made for it. Put him in there, and then guess what? Pretty good right guard. Like,
yeah.
It's just the decision making has not been.
I mean, they messed around with Travis Glover and Kadeem Telford. And I like Travis Glover. I think he's got a ton of potential. Mm-hmm. He got hurt. But, you know, Anthony Belton should have been stuck in there right away.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, you take your guys and put them in a position, find out where they can play, and he's a second-round pick.
Yeah.
My God. Same with, you know, Jordan Morgan. He's a first-round pick. Try him at left tackle. Yeah.
So in the confines of this discussion here, I think we're all bringing up a lot of positives about Matt LaFleur and a lot of warts, too. I think there's both. Lame duck is not tenable for next year. You got to fire him or extend him. In ranking the options here, would you say extend him over fire him? Is that where you guys would be?
I would say extend. I would say, why not, like I said, just run it. That was my thing. I say, why not run it back, be proactive with your staff, make some changes there, and see if a healthy roster can get you to a Super Bowl next year. That would be what I would say, and then see what happens.
Yeah, I think you'd have to hire a defensive coach if you fired him, because I don't know who the offensive coaches are that you would take, and then you'd have to rely on that guy having a really good offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That would be my thought process, and I think you probably just gotta take two more years of LaFleur and see what he can do. There's a lot of history there with not winning a Super Bowl at this point in your career, and you know, of the top, what was it, 8 longest tenured guys, only him and Sean McDermott haven't won Super Bowls. So that's a knock, too.
It's a huge knock.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, and you had Aaron Rodgers. So.
Yeah.
If you're pinning me to the wall, I'd extend him.
Yeah. It's really tough. It is. And I think, again, because I just don't know if there's any coach out there that you would jump on. But don't get me wrong. If a guy like Mike Tomlin already announced, oh, yeah, this is going to be my last season in Pittsburgh, I want to coach again.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, well, I think you should call that guy maybe and see if he'd be intrigued, his interest, maybe talk to his agent or something like that. But outside of that, yeah, I just don't, like I mentioned, I didn't see a Liam Cohen out there or a Ben Johnson or anything like that that you would jump on.
That's a very interesting point that you just brought up, Dominique, is, okay, aside from names, who profiles as the ideal person to be the head coach for this team? Right. Because if you were to fire Matt LaFleur, I don't think the right option is just go get another up-and-comer.
No.
I think, like, the best fit for this team would be, like, Bruce Arians 5 years ago. Like, Tampa Bay Buccaneers Bruce Arians. Kind of that seasoned vet that has that offensive acumen for Jordan Love, who has been through a lot, seen a lot, and
made great hires.
Can shepherd a young roster to that next step. Because when Matt LaFleur has gotten in trouble from the sidelines, oftentimes it's been those emotional in the moment maturity things, right? A Bruce Arians doesn't do that. Mike Tomlin doesn't do that. A John Harbaugh doesn't do that. That's the type of guy, if you were to, it's not about having another Ben Johnson. Like, that's not the right fit here. It's in a lot of ways, that's just a retread of this model and this approach that you've already gone with and you feel like at this point has not worked. it would be more of your seasoned veteran coach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it has to be because, I mean, Ben Johnson, obviously he's done a great job, but he has flaws right now. I don't know if this is a group that is going to be another year older. You kind of take a step back and hire a first-year coach with this group. I don't know if that would be the route you would want to go.
Yeah, I don't know. And the Packers have a long, long history of hiring offensive coaches.
Yeah.
I mean, the last defensive coach was Ray Rhodes in 1999. He lasted 1 year. And then I think before that it was Phil Bankston, Vince Lombardi's defensive coordinator. So, you know, it's been all offense. And that's because they've had quarterbacks. They've had franchise quarterbacks. They've had really good quarterbacks. And, you know, it's an offense dominated league. And I really think offensive guys are where you win Super Bowls.
Yeah, so I would extend about, again, I'd want it to be the 2 year high AAV. Unless John Harbaugh in Baltimore says, I'm done, change the scenery. Or Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. One of those two guys. I'd be very, very enticed.
Could bring Mike McCarthy back. He's available.
I don't see that happening.
Doesn't he like live in Green Bay now?
Yeah,
though?
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting though that like after Mike McCarthy, the what's the fit for this team is like someone more younger, more innovative. But now, tell me if you think I'm wrong. But the way that I feel about this team, what the best fit is, if it's not Matt LaFleur, would be someone who is more seasoned, more experienced, and going back to that with this youth.
Yeah, I think Matt LaFleur, offensively, people are always on him about his play calling and stuff like that. I think he's a very good offensive mind. Yeah. I think he's excellent offensive mind. Yeah. I think he could use some help in some areas. I think he could use a really veteran, you know, either offensive coordinator or line coach or assistant head coach, you know, who could really teach some fundamentals that they sometimes lack.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But say, yeah.
I don't know how that would work exactly, but he needs to add to his staff.
Yeah. But because isn't Versace his assistant head coach now?
Yeah.
And so, he can't get the special teams corrected, so that he's already got his hands full. This is all a cascading effect from when they lost Nathaniel Hackett to Denver, and Nathaniel Hackett bombed out in Denver. It was bad. But when they had him here at offensive coordinator, they had that offensive line coach in Adam Stenovich. And he did a phenomenal job with the line. And Luke Getsy was the backup. He was the assistant. He was not in charge of the offensive line. But you lose Nathaniel Hackett, you promote Adam Stenovich, he is more in charge of the offense and structure and meetings and organization, less to do with the offensive line. Luke Butkus gets upgraded to offensive line. He's not Adam Stenovich, and it just all cascades from there. They haven't really recovered from that.
Yeah, no question. And guys, this is a great discussion, and we are far from done talking about this, and we'll definitely talk more about this in the coming weeks, but we can go ahead and wrap up this edition of the podcast and, you know, get ready for the just wrapped up practice so we can get ready to talk to some players and just kind of get a sense of how they're feeling before heading to Minnesota to wrap up regular season play, and then it's on to the playoffs. So, guys, appreciate it, as always, for the insights. And we thank you all for checking out the Green 19 podcast. Once again, Happy New Year to each and every one of you. We appreciate you that always take the time to read what we do and listen to this podcast. So, for Ryan Wood, Tom Silverstein, I'm Dominique Yates.